Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to season 3 of For the Record. This is our kickoff episode, and I am thrilled to have a dear friend, a trusted colleague, and just an overall badass on the podcast today. I met Brittany in 2017, 16, long time ago, and I have watched her career just unfold and blossom in the last 5 or 6 years. She is an incredible injector, a great educator, an international phenomenon, and was our X Factor Award winner in 2021 for Aesthetic Next for the Nexties, and has just absolutely exploded, although I know it's taken many, many, many years to get here, and a new practice owner. So Brittany Crossdale, welcome to our show. Welcome to For the Record.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I've only waited 2 full seasons for you to come on. Episode 41, you're finally here, so we're so excited. But I'm so happy to talk to you right now with all the things happening in your life. You are in the middle of a big transition, so I want to jump right in and give us a little bit of a background about you and what you're doing right now.
So you're absolutely right. I'm in the middle of a lot of transitions, and it is an incredible growth period right now. I am transitioning from The Fix as their clinical director and opening my own practice called Fulcrum Aesthetics, which will have everything from skincare, injectables, surgery, and we're going to have our own training facility, of course. Because what would a clinic be without a training facility?
It's so funny because in 2022, that's the case. It's like, if you're not training, what are you doing with your life? It's changed so much. When I started with Gain, people were like, oh, I'm going to be a trainer. Okay. And now it's like, can I be a trainer? Everyone's so excited about it. But before we hopped on, you mentioned why you're naming it Fulcrum, which I'm such a science and math nerd. So tell us how you decided on that name.
Okay. So Fulcrum in architecture, it's the main pivot point. It's the main balancing point of the building itself. And in aesthetics, we have ligaments in our face that are the main balancing point as well that you always consider and you build around. So I thought that not only did it apply to aesthetic medicine, it applies to us also holistically, that we want that fine balance of internal health and we want that represented externally.
I love the creativity of it because, you know, here at Aesthetic Record, we hear the same names every day. And so I think it's so fun that you've kind of brought in this whole architectural, you know, mathematics piece to it, which is kind of you as a person. I feel like you're like me, you're kind of nerdy too, but you've got your hands right now in a lot of the different things. You mentioned training before, you train all the time, but I remember when I first met you, you were really just getting started. I mean, again, this has been like 5-6 years ago as a trainer. So at what point did you kind of decide, I'm going to go beyond just being, I shouldn't say just being, it sounds awful, but being an incredible injector to now also, you know, traveling the world to train other injectors?
You know, it's funny you ask that because I don't think there was ever a specific point where I decided to do that. It kind of happened to me. And I remember talking to my friend Rana a few years ago. We had an opportunity. There was a training company with a physician in London who asked us to train for him. And we had to sign a contract that we would never open our own training company. And Rana and I were talking, and she's like, I already have a training company, but, you know, you don't have your own yet. I don't know if you'd want to give that up. And I remember talking to her and saying, I don't know. I can't see myself ever leaving the bedside. I love clinical practice. And having my own training company isn't something that I necessarily want. She's like, never say never. You never know. And it's reminiscent of also my research instructor when I was finishing my master's thesis, my nurse practitioner program. She was like, do you want to go on and get your PhD? And I was like, no, I don't want to stay and do research forever. And now here I am wanting to have a research facility and training program. So I feel like it's a slow evolution, and it's once you become competent, and for me, once I became more competent and comfortable with clinical practice and my clinical outcomes, I was hungry for more. I wanted to learn and see what others were doing across the pond, what were other aesthetic injectors and physicians doing to achieve the results that I was seeing represented online, and how can I bring that back home to my patients and make sure that it is incredibly safe for our patients. So really understanding your why as to why you're doing what you're doing, why you're choosing that product, why you're placing at that depth. And you learn, I feel like I've learned so much more by teaching. I've become such a better injector by asking myself those questions and preparing to be asked those questions as well by students. So it kind of just came about from wanting to continue to better myself and kind of looking around and thinking, okay, well, what's next? What else can I do? But you have to feel comfortable and competent where you're at before you move on.
Yeah, I think that last part right now in our industry is a bit of a, it's a gray area, right? Everyone's training. Oftentimes the manufacturers pick you to train because of what you bought. I mean, we know this. I was one of them. And people who, you know, I'm injecting a few patients a week. I'm definitely competent. I'm going to be a trainer. That's, in my opinion, a very scary place to be, especially as a meeting coordinator. You know, as we look at speakers on a podium, like, oh my gosh, they should not be training. But you have slayed it with training. Watching you lecture is like art. I laugh all the time. People ask about you. I'm like, well, she's like such a science medical. You go so deep into all the reasons why, but you're also fun. You know, the Behind the Syringe Squad girls, you guys have a ton of fun on stage. But of that group, you're definitely the one that's like most medical. How did you learn to lecture and train in a way that's both engaging, but also, to your point, really impactful?
So I think, and thank you for saying that. I think it's something that I still struggle with and I'm still working on, is to try to make it super fun and upbeat. I think what has helped is when you watch yourself, when you can watch the clips, or like I had messaged you the other day, like, do you have recordings of my past presentations? Because if you can stomach through watching yourself and listening to yourself, because that's tough. if you can get through that, you'll make your next presentation that much better. You won't continue to say, you know, and your flyaway stray hairs that your mom's texting you about later on. You know, you can contain those. You take a look and you're like, ooh, actually, that was probably not the best outfit choice to be on stage. Really did not compliment, you know, my figure. Or a different color clashed with the background. So I like watching my presentations back, making notes. And I, as far as remaining engaging, I try to think of it as what fascinates me, what holds my attention. And there are two things. One, I always like to know about people's life story. So I need to be connected emotionally to this person as well. So I like to start off, or in the beginning of a presentation, kind of give everyone, the audience, something they can relate to, whether it's a patient story that impacted me, and then that ties into what I'm teaching about, because everyone is interested in, everyone's interested in someone's story, right? Or that I believe they are. And it makes it more memorable when you can connect an emotion to the science as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think you nailed it. Watching yourself back is tragic. I have to do all of our... I have to watch every video that I ever do here, because as JT is going through, my production guru going through and editing, I have to like watch it as well and say, cut this, don't cut this. And there are days I'm like, oh gosh, I look a corpse, or my hair is terrible, or my makeup is awful. Like right now I should get my hair dyed. So if you guys watching on Spotify or YouTube, I've got terrible roots. So I get it. But you know what? People ask me all the time, how can I get better? I'm like, watch yourself. Watch your own lecture. You will immediately and abundantly know where you should improve by watching yourself, because it's like hearing nails on a chalkboard. So I agree with you. But I've always found you to be a great lecturer, by the way. Fascinating. But you mentioned going across a pond. And so I think part of that is being a great educator. A lot of our international colleagues are so dynamic on stage. They can work the stage like almost like a fashion show. When you see them present, you know, look at Raj. They're larger than life on stage, right? How did you get connected to that group? Because you're like the it girl over there. When I went to MCAS with Brittany guys in Paris, and everyone's like, Brittany's here. You know, everyone knows you. How did you get from Chicago, Illinois to like being the it girl across the pond?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know. I think it was from, I go to the conferences and I ask questions. I'm genuinely an incredibly curious person. And, you know, some people, when I train people, you know, some people are very complimentary and they'll say, oh my gosh, you're so smart, you're so this. And it's just, I'm curious. It's not something that I would say, I think when you're hungry for knowledge, you just tend to hold on to it more. So I went to conferences and I would stay after and I'd ask questions that I thought, again, would help improve my clinical practice and something that I could bring back to my patients. And that must have made an impact on individuals, because they would stay in contact or they'd say, hey, would you help me with this situation? I also had a ptosis case that went viral that I helped manage. I didn't cause it, but I could cause one in the future. So I'm not, you know, no shame to anyone who has caused it. But I helped someone through it, and it turned out to be bigger than I ever realized it was going to be. And the CMAT group reached out to me and asked me to help them with a couple of ptosis cases. And then they asked me to be on the board. So just through the process of having that original connection, asking them questions, I'd already developed a relationship with them regarding certain cases. But that's kind of how I got started with them.
Well, I feel like I forgot about the ptosis case, and I feel like that's when you just exploded. I watched it every day to see, you know, because she was posting progressive photos every so many days of her getting better and better. And I think you're on a ticker. I think I saw like something about her, like on, I don't know if it was like Good Morning America, but some like the big giant shows. I'm like, oh my God, I know her as an actor. It was like one of those, you know, Where's Waldo moments. But I feel like that case was a huge part for you. We worked together on an UpNeek project because you started working into UpNeek, into some of your cases and things. But give us an idea of how that felt to go from, I mean, you were already a big deal in our world, you know, as far as like our little niche of aesthetics, and then you became like a viral thing across like the whole world. So what was that overnight sensation like to kind of handle the fame of that?
Oh my gosh. You know, I always try to remember it's very much just in our little niche, because when I go bring my son to rowing, or his games, nobody knows who you are, right? So I think I always just try to simplify it and not let anything get to my head. I believe the moment you start thinking you're a big deal is the moment you're gonna fall and fail. So for me, I don't feel like I'm international sensation is what you said, I think. I don't even remember. I don't think I am. I'm just genuinely curious. And I think most importantly, just be a decent human being, be nice to people, and offer your help when you can. And I think that gets you much further in life.
Well, I think too, you know, you worked with Tom Van Eyck last year at our show. You work with Lee Walker now, obviously. I mean, you've found people who are really good at what they do to collaborate with. I think that's part of it too, is that you're not doing it for the sake of, oh, that person's famous, let's work together on something. You found like true experts who better you helped better them. I think it's a very I don't know what's the word, not copacetic, but you know, you guys are getting something out of it from each other. But I think, you know, you and Tom Van Eyck last year were phenomenal. I do have footage, by the way, I'll get it to you. But thinking through all that, like, how did you, you know, how do you start to connect with people like a Lee Walker to say, let's do research? Because you mentioned doing research. People always ask me, how do I start doing research? I'm like, that's a whole different animal that you can't just like, yeah. You can't just decide to be a trainer. Like, you can just decide to do research. Like, it's a much different thing. So how are you getting involved in writing articles and doing, you know, in clinic studies and things like that?
So there are a couple of different ways. It is really difficult to get into research if you're in private practice. Generally, to jump into research, you're affiliated with either your alma mater, whatever university you graduated from, you're still on staff at that university, and then you're asking for grants, right? If you're in private practice, you kind of want to get involved with these publishing groups. If you can, it's very difficult to break into. I started, again, just because Jillian Murray, she is a dear friend of mine, and she is a pharmacist in London, and she publishes quite a bit with CMAC and Lee Walker. And so she and I became good friends, and we literally WhatsApp each other almost every single day during COVID. We would leave 10-15 minute voice messages for one another about cases that we saw or about recent published articles that we were reading that were being pushed out during COVID. And we would really dissect them and kind of test each other and challenge each other's beliefs about the validity of these papers. And from there, she was like, hey, do you mind actually helping me with the vision loss paper? Do you mind helping me with the paper about wound care from vascular occlusions? So that's how I got started in it. And for others who want to do it, I would look into your local university and see if they have any programs for research. Just get your feet wet with research in general and understand how these studies are actually structured and the timeline. So you kind of understand what's expected of you before you start within our industry.
Yeah, I think you make a valid point. There's a lot to it. And the manufacturers let you do IIT, so investigator-initiated trials. But you have to come with a great proposal, good outcomes. You have to be able to show that you can do an exact study replica across all patient types. Like, it's not a throw it against the wall and get started. It's like a very prepared and planned thing. And I've seen some incredible ones. That's how we get, you know, off-label research, right? It's like the IITs, independent groups doing it. But you mentioned Jillian Murray. It's so funny. We were in Paris, and she was like, what do you mean I'm a big deal? I'm like, you're a huge deal. You're like super famous. Everyone in America knows you. She's like, huh, that's interesting. I mean, so humble. I mean, I'm like, all of you guys together, like, what? You think I'm famous? Like, yes, you're a huge deal for us, because she's talking about safety, as are you all the time, and Lee, which I think has become a huge part of our culture, which leads into a whole different kind of area, thinking about like the Behind the Syringe Squad girls. All four of you on stage talk about safety and about safe injections all the time. You're showing great technique, but you're also really talking about patient care. Give us an idea of how like the BTS thing came about, because those talk about four star powers coming together in what could be the clash of the titans, but has turned out instead to be a really great friendship and a really great group of colleagues sharing education. So how did that whole thing get started?
Oh, thank you. You know what? We are very good friends, and we became close through a Galderma training, actually. So Amy Birkenstam came up to me, and she was like, oh my gosh, I want to get to know you a little bit better. I've seen some of your stuff. And you know, you've met Amy. Amy's super sweet, like one of the kindest souls you'll ever meet. And also really fun. So I was actually, when she approached me, I had my luggage and I was going back to the airport. It was one of the GAIN trainings where we were actually in the airport. Do you know that hotel?
No, it's it's the one that's in DFW, that one. I've spent many nights there, Brittany, slaving away at GAIN trainings. Yes, I do know.
I bet. So I was rolling my luggage, and at the time I was like, I don't know how far I'm going to be to my terminal, and I'm always like early, and if I'm on time, I'm late. So I was nervous, and I wanted to catch my flight. And Amy's like, hey, I want to meet you, I remember holding the elevator, and the elevator's alarming, you know, like beeping at me. And she's like, hey, why don't you stay? We're going to go to an after party. I'm like, I can't, I've got to catch my flight. I can't. And I was like, here's my number. So we became friends and just, you know, started kind of chatting again over cases. And she's like, I'd love to get us together. And she got Shelby, Nat, and myself all together on a phone call. And then we kind of started just doing Instagram Lives talking about our clinical experience. And Amy's a master at branding, so she immediately branded it behind the syringe. She got a logo. She had our faces up. So, I mean, she's a brilliant businesswoman. And so that's kind of how it started, really. I think a lot of it was, you know, us as a collective, but it was Amy's vision and Amy pushed it.
That's so true. People don't know that about her, that she's a brilliant business person and she's a master at branding. But I think she had the foresight to see the four of you together for very different reasons make up this incredible group of people. And I will tell you, our workshop for you guys at the conference this year was sold out like crazy fast. People are still buying tickets virtually to watch it. I mean, your name, although it is branded, you know, it precedes you. People want to know what you have to say. And I think that's the fun thing about the industry right now, though, is that a lot of the celebrity injectors are actually really good for the first time in a long time, like really good and worth following. And so I'm happy to see that you guys have kind of taken a, you know, you guys, Erica, there's a whole group now, Waseem, that are a big deal, but also still really good. So I love the BTS girls. I tune into all your Instagram lives. Nat's always driving and she can never get on. Shelby's kids are in the background yelling. I mean, it's always a fun time on the BTS IG lives, but I digress. Well, so thinking back to, you know, even that group, so you guys are all non-MDs, which we like to do a little bit of controversy here on the show. I have been, as you know, a giant advocate for, you know, the non-core and the non-MDs since day one. That's why we started Gen Now, because I was like, these nurses are freaking incredible. Give them a podium. How do you navigate that? Because you are very medical, very well-researched, to be able to say in a room, hey, I'm just as smart as you are. I'm just, you know, as experienced as you are. And still have people actually like you and not think that you're a pain in the ass.
Well, maybe some people think I'm a pain in the ass, but, you know, I think of it this way. There are many specialties, you know, there's core, non-core as well. And remember when, you know, physicians, MDs really were upset with DOs, and now DOs are more recognized as they should be. But I think of it this way. In every area of medicine, there are many different specialties that that overlap. And in our industry, in the United States, and actually across the world, with the exception of Netherlands, there is no aesthetic medicine specialty, true aesthetic medicine specialty, where you can become board certified in aesthetic medicine and non-surgical outcomes. So no one is truly the master in aesthetic medicine. Dermatology groups are not even trained in their residency. It's not ubiquitous in their training, right? Their training is, some programs have some cosmetic injectables, but it's often either in fellowship or an offshoot of their training, a couple of hours, you know, every other month or so that they'll get that. So, and that the same holds true even in a lot of plastic surgery training. And the same holds true for NPs who are in dermatology and PAs who are in dermatology. So I don't think there's one group who can claim it as their own. But I understand that people are going to want to claim it for their own, because this industry is incredibly profitable. And everyone's trying to carve out space for their own and say, this is mine, mine, mine. So I see it more of them trying to protect what they've also worked for, more than them trying to push us out. While they might be also trying to push us out in that protection process, that's just not going to happen. That it's within our scope of practice. And we all know from the marketing data from industry, non-physician injectors, so NPs, PAs, RNs, we comprise about 80% of the injecting market. We inject the majority of the time. And because I am a trainer and I'll train physicians, non-physicians, so NPs, PAs, I actually don't like the word non-physicians. It almost like takes away, right?
It does.
So physicians, NPs, PAs, and RNs. And I will tell you, everyone starts somewhere. And it doesn't matter the level of education that you have. Everyone starts somewhere. And I actually will find that NPs, PAs, and RNs are much more likely to ask the question because they're not ashamed of not necessarily having the answer right away. They understand that that wasn't in their basic training to become an NP, PA. So they'll say, hey, why would I do it this way? And so really, they get to shorten the learning curve.
I think you mentioned a lot of great points there. One being non-position sounds terrible, but so does extenders. Like, what do you guys want to call yourselves? Because as a person who runs a meeting, I would love to be able to use the right term, but no one can decide on one. So step one, let's figure out the right terminology for an aesthetic professional who is not a physician. Any ideas?
Yes. So I believe call us by our titles. So this is the same thing with a nurse practitioner versus a nurse. While I still hold my nursing license, you're required to become a nurse practitioner. I operate at my NP licensure. So I'm a full practice authority nurse practitioner. I prescribe. I don't have any oversight in the state of Illinois. So I like to be referred to as a nurse practitioner. And my physician associate colleagues like to be referred to as physician associate. I don't necessarily have any issues with mid-levels. Some people do with that nomenclature. I think it just makes it's an easy way to kind of bunch us all together. But I think just call us by our titles.
I agree. I just always say NPPARN all together, like one big word, NPPARN.
Yes.
Because it's just easier. Because I agree with you. I think, and there is a vast difference between being an NP and an RN, or being a PA and an NP. Like, your schooling is much different. Yeah. I think people who don't know that, many people, you know, in commonplace don't know a PA and NP go to way different schools, way different kinds of things in the setup, different scopes of practice. PAs are still very limited in some states. Like, you can only do dermatology if you study dermatology. NPs have a much broader scope of practice in most states. But I think there's a very different idea there. But I think part of it, what you said, was it's about the business aspect. It's very profitable here. So I was just having a conversation with Larry Blevins. I'm sure you know him. We were talking, everyone knows Larry Blevins, right? We were talking about, he's like, how come the community doesn't share? And I said, well, think about if you're a nurse who's constantly being ridiculed because you're not a physician, who's come from the hospital where you've been, you know, barked at with orders for your entire career. And now you're here making really good money, doing what you love, enjoying it. Why would you want to give that away? Why would you want to educate the person down the street who might take that away from you? I said, you know, you have to understand PAs and NPs and RNs come from a very different place when they start. If they're historic, you know, they've been here for 10, 15 years, coming out of school now is much different than it was coming out of school, you know, 2020, even, you know, 2015. So I think there is a difference. He's like, oh, you know, that makes sense to me now, thinking about where they've come from and what they've gone through versus kind of what we've gone through as PAs. So I think there is a difference. But to that point, on the business side, now that you are a business owner, what's that journey been like? Even thinking through this whole PA and PRN, MD, you have a surgeon now who's going to work with you. What's the things that you didn't anticipate or were like, holy crap, this is much harder than I thought it would be as a new business owner?
So, you know, a lot of us say, oh, we want to start our own business so we can make our own schedule. And instead of going from working 9 to 5, you're working 5 a.m. until midnight, 7 days a week. That's something that is difficult, but it's, you're working for you and you're working to build your dream and your vision. I believe if you don't have a strong dream and vision, that's why your business will fail. Because you certainly have to have a great work ethic. But even with a great work ethic, if you lack a vision and motivation, you're not going to succeed. So that's been a little bit, I feel like, exhausting. It's exhausting. You're just constantly in a state of exhaustion. I can navigate the politics. I can navigate, you know, the MD, non-MD politics. Well, I don't mind that. I feel like, put me in a room with anyone and let's talk aesthetics. And I feel very comfortable in my position. That doesn't bother me. I know that as a trainer, sometimes there are, some of us are put with certain accounts because we're more comfortable teaching to these accounts. So starting a business is just, the biggest challenge is really just there's not enough time in the day. And actually, Jessica from Beauty Culture, she posted this really funny video, this reel recently about not being able to say no. And it was like, yo, I'm the problem. And it was like what every female business owner goes through. And it's just, constantly, yep, I can do that. Oh, shoot, I don't think I have time in the day to do that. This week I've got, you know, I'm flying out here, I'm presenting here, I have to submit this paper on top of my full clinic schedule. But let me commit to that as well. So the hardest thing is really just kind of, there's just not enough time in the day to get everything done.
I agree with you. I was just having this discussion last night that the only resource that's finite is time. You know, it's like the great equalizer. There's just not enough of it. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think too, for you, now that you own a business and you are the sole breadwinner of that business, right? You've got to be there. You've got to be thinking about schedules, and it never leaves you. I mean, even I don't own Aesthetic Record, but I'm pretty much in charge of everything day to day. And I go to bed at night thinking about, you know, payroll and can we expand, and people are mad at us, and is my team feeling supported? Do they feel like they're happy here? And now I have to think about culture and retention and hiring and firing. And, you know, there's so many things. People forget about all that. And I think people who rush to open their own business, especially in aesthetics, who aren't great injectors yet, have to learn to inject and learn to own a business. And that's a lot to do. So you just now making this leap, you know, someone who's coming into this brand new and says, I want to be an entrepreneur on day one. What's your recommendation for them to either stop and learn to be an injector first or go all in as an entrepreneur and just rip the bandaid off and do it? What's your best advice?
Ooh, that's tough. Okay. I do believe you need to know the industry before you become an entrepreneur in this field. You know, one of my girlfriends, she runs a staffing agency. And she says if she had known what she knows now, she probably would have been too scared to start. So for her, it made sense to just jump in and figure it out as you go. I believe in this industry, if you try to figure it out as you go, patients are going to be hurt, or you could really permanently ruin your reputation and your name. So my recommendation is work as an injector for a reputable clinic, a reputable physician, or injector, and understand what you really think you're getting into. There are a lot of people who want to start businesses, but I think once they start, they'd be just as happy to go back and not have all of that responsibility and liability on their shoulders. So learn about the business, decide if it's something you really want. I believe if you want to start your own business, it really is because you should feel that you're offering something that just is not out there right now. If it is already out there, see if you can work with them and stick with them for life, because you can make an amazing living working for a reputable practice and not go home at night and worry about payroll, worry about the recession, worry about, you know, this person being upset about that, and are you going to get sued? It's not all what it's cracked up to be. I think definitely work in the industry, have a general understanding of what your goals and your visions are for starting a new business if you're going to, and does it actually fulfill a need that this market needs, right?
You know, no one's ever really said it like that to me. I think that's brilliant advice. If you're doing what people are already doing everywhere else, and it's not a unique thing, then there isn't a place for you yet, right? I think to your point, hone your vision, hone your mission, hone your values, and then start again. And you're in a very popular area. Obviously, you're in Chicago. You've got a whole tribe of, for one thing, hilarious colleagues. I mean, between Danny and Ron, good God, bless your heart to even have to keep up with. I couldn't keep a straight face in the room with either one of those two. But how have you carved that out for you? How did you decide from the Fitz, who you've done amazing work there, to say, I'm going to now find my own thing? What is that thing that you are going to market with as, you know, sort of your unique niche or strategy?
So for me, it's going to be running research and creating protocols for our industry. So we'll have a research center on the second floor, and as well as a training facility. So our clinic is constantly going to be working on improving ourselves, and not just for us, but also to publish it and present that to the industry as well as safe practices for our patients. That's something that I'm really excited about, and that's what makes me want to wake up every day with excitement and keep going and grinding until midnight.
You are a grinder. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, to kind of get on a personal note, you and I've gone through a divorce and I have, you know, had to live through that whole dramatic thing, which thank God we're back to being great friends again and life is better. But you're in the middle of it. Yours is maybe not as peaceful as mine now, but I promise you it does get better eventually. Thinking through that, I mean, obviously there's a lot of legalities there and building a brand, and he can or can't take certain things. And how are you navigating in the middle of all these things that you're doing? Also, navigating a divorce, and I'm sure attorneys and meetings and all of that. This, because again, we're a very female heavy industry. Divorce is a real thing. No one plans for it in the beginning. And then you open up a business and it happens and you have that oh shit moment of now I've got to figure out what to do. So where are you at with that? And how is that shaping your decisions going forward?
So everyone, if you did not sign a prenup, sign a postnup. Everybody needs a postnup. Everyone does. Even if you're not thinking of starting your own business, get a postnup, please. I would say, luckily, mine's nearly wrapped up in a little nice bow, but it was very, very difficult to get through. And even, I remember telling one of my friends when I had 2 years ago, no one really knew that we were getting divorced because we were still very friendly and it was amicable. And I remember telling my friend, like, this is going to be amicable. And he and I are on the same page. This is not going to be a big deal. And my friend said, I hope that for you, but divorces get dirty. So please protect yourself. And I'm like, oh, I don't need to. That would never happen. And everything that you think would never happen happens. So protect yourself. And that's something even in business now, starting this new business, luckily I've been through a divorce now and I've learned so much from it. So even building out this business and the business structure and articles of operation, it's very much planning for the worst case scenario in the beginning.
Yeah, that sounds like a doomsday, but I will tell you, having lived through it as well, and it got very dark, very, very dark for a while. But also just seeing all these friends that I have who I love dearly. I mean, Amy's been through, we've all kind of been there. It's, they can take what you've worked so hard for as a business partner or a marriage. Like, it's, to me, a business partnership and a marriage are very much the exact same thing. You're both in it and everyone's happy until you're not. And then it's like disaster strikes. But thinking through that, would you ever again have a business partner? And even if you do now, like you said, articles of incorporation, but is that a road that you ever want to travel ever again?
So I would with the proper legal protection. And I now, because I'm comfortable with the industry, I know what my limitations are. I would bring a business partner in who can offer something I cannot, right? So if you bring a business partner in for the right reasons and you lay out your expectations, and so this kind of ties back into, should you just jump into entrepreneurship? I don't believe you should jump into entrepreneurship when you don't understand the industry or what's going to be expected of you. But because I've been through this now, I know what it's like to run a practice. I know what, opening the fits during COVID. I know a lot more about employment law than I thought I ever would. So I definitely go into partnership, and partnerships that I've seen run really well in our industry, generally they're coupled. So they're partners in life as well. I've seen one in California. There's a group of three physicians who are med school friends, and you know who he is. And they've been partners since they graduated from school. from residency, and they're doing really well, but they also offer three separate specialties, so they don't overlap and compete with one another. And they also have this healthy sense of each individual's role, and they laid that out as well. So I do believe partnership can be successful if you started off on the right, with the right protection in place too, in case things don't go well. So you go into it hoping for the best, but plan for the worst.
That sounds so bad, but that's reality. That's just like that's the nature of the beast. But I think what you said about having things that each other offers that are complementary is so important. I think about this a lot. If we're just best friends who have the same skill set, the same kind of thing, going into business together, there is a natural innate need to compete. Like even in a marriage, right? There's like this innate thing that even though you don't want to compete because you're doing the same things all day, in a sense you might. I think this idea that if I'm really great at business, you're really great at injecting, we're both kind of good at the other one, and we come together and make this, you know, make this amazing thing. That to me is a much healthier version of reality than, hey, let's just start a business together. I like to inject, you like to inject, let's just do it. I mean, there's so much more forethought into it now because this industry is now a real thing. You know, 15 years ago, we were like, I mean, Julie Bass Kaplan talks about it. You know, she's like, I'm just trying Botox on jewelry. Like, it's no big deal. It was a much different place, but now it's like a real specialty, a lot of real money. You got to plan for that stuff. And I think business partnerships, my girl Leslie Tracy is always talking about that. Like, you got to have all the paperwork. You got to protect yourself. You got to get everything in order. So if you're listening and you haven't done that, heed Brittany's advice and go get an attorney and get your paperwork done and get a post-nup. Couldn't agree more. Get a freaking post-nup. You need it. Protect yourself. But anyway, I digress from that. So let's talk about, just as a kind of wrap up here, you as a person, what you're doing. I was listening to BTS IG Live a few weeks ago. You're like, I'm going to this conference and this conference and this conference. You have a lot going on. So give us an idea of what's in your next 6 months and where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing.
So the next 6 months are going to be a super busy 6 months. November, which is just next week, I'm going to fly out to Las Vegas for our Train the Trainer for Allergan, where we learn about Botox. And then I'm going to be flying to London for our CMAC's first complications conference, which is going to be, I mean, absolutely amazing. We've got all the heavy hitters there discussing like our cases and telling and teaching about how to correct them, not just showing, look at this complication, this is what happens, but really teaching how you can correct these complications and how you can assess them, diagnose them pretty quickly to hopefully reduce the sequela. And so that will be in November. In December, I'm going to be at Beauty Through Science in New York, not Stockholm, but in New York. In January, I'm going to be out in Switzerland with Julie Horn, teaching in the Inner Circle. And the Inner Circle will consist of Raj, and who is just brilliant with assessment and injection. I love listening to him with when he assesses full face assessment. Sebastian Cotofana, and he'll be talking about anatomy, of course. And Miranda and Tim Pierce, who again talk about an amazing partnership. Not only are they partners in life, but they're partners in business. I think they'd be great to talk to, like, how do they make this successful? And really, like, tell us the truth. And they will, you know, when does it get ugly? How do you guys overcome it? Do they have like a strict, okay, at 7 o'clock at night, we no longer can discuss business. You know, it has to be our relationship and the kids. It's got to be family only, or is it business all the time? I'm curious. So super excited about that. That's in January. And in February, we'll have our Gail Derma Train the Trainer as well, our annual. And then end of February, early March, my clinic should be fully open, and then doors open and ready to go. Fully operational, two-story, 5,000 square feet facility. The first floor will be the clinic. The second floor is going to be offices and research and the training facility.
And let's also sprinkle in that you have a family at home, right? You've got kiddo, dogs, you got a lot going on too. So how do you balance all of that as we, you know, again, as we end here today? The burning question I get, people ask me this every day, is like, how do you do it all? I'm like, first of all, I don't, not well. How do you do it all? Because you're traveling constantly, you know, raising children is a hard job. I don't care, even if you're not busy, it's a hard job, period. But you're doing it. So give us a couple words of advice on that.
Well, you know what I also forgot to mention is in March is LAMCA. I'll be presenting with the Behind the Syringe Girls in LAMCA. So how do you do it? I have such a passion for it. It is really difficult. It is, you give up. You have to understand that sometimes you're going to give up being at some recitals or plays for you to be able to also pursue your career. It's having those touch points with your kid. With my son, we have daily check-ins, and I ask him, I want to know the top three things that either made him happy, made him smile, or he was grateful for that day. So it's one, I'm hoping to teach him gratitude, but two, I'm learning more about him every day. What made you smile? And I like to make note of ways that I can make him happy and let him know that he's my top priority and I am doing a lot of this for him. So how do I do it? I try to be really tight with my schedule, and I try to cluster when I'm traveling. I try to only travel once a month now, at most. I'm trying to scale back and be home a bit more, but when I travel, it's about once a month, and that's when I'll cluster conferences or any ad boards all together during that time, those 4 days, and usually it's a weekend, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then I fly back on Sunday. And so I just try to schedule it when, luckily I only have one kid. Amy has five, right? So I only have one child scheduled to work around. So it's a lot easier for me. Although he's in one main sport, he loves rowing. So I look at his rowing schedule and I plan around it.
Yeah, I'm going to C2C with Gretchen and Dr. Sadat and Amy in a couple of days. And I'm flying back after the big party early Sunday morning, like 4 a.m. to the airport for hockey. I can't miss a hockey game 2 days in a row. So I'm like, I will be home hell or high water. I may be like high school rolling out of the bar, you know, going to the airport, but I'll be there. I'll be there on time. But I think you have some discount codes for all the conferences that you're going to, or a couple discount codes. So guys who are listening, I'll put those in the comments for you, or we'll flash them on screen so you can get a little bit of a discount. So hopefully you can afford your kids' lives and go to conferences, because discount codes help. But you have been, for the record, a phenomenal guest. And I just absolutely love you and adore you and think that you're just the best ever. So to have you on the show today is such a fun thing for me. And I'm going to be at a lot of those conferences because I want to see you and see the whole squad. We have so much fun together. I think we are a good example of women can come together, support each other, be excited for one another, and not compete. And in a room when you're not there, I want to talk about you and how great you are. I think you do the same thing for me. And so I think as our industry evolves, we have to really understand that concept and perpetuate it and build these friend groups and build our village and, you know, celebrate the wins of our friends, because you definitely have a lot of them. So we're so glad that you came on today. And any final thoughts or ideas before we roll off?
You know what? Thank you so much for having me on. I absolutely love and adore you as well. And my final parting thought is I want people to know their why. I think this industry, I have a lot of nurses reaching out to me now saying, I want to transition. I want to switch careers. I have dentists reaching out to me saying they want to join the aesthetic industry now. Know your why. Why do you want to be here? Is it because you want to enrich others' lives? Is it because you really want to combine? You like the procedural aspect of this area of medicine? I think it can be very easy to get lost in the glitz and glamour. But I think if you stay true to yourself and kind of remember your why, you'll be successful and you're not going to get lost in the glitz.
Yeah, great life advice in general, too. Always know your why. I think it's easy to get up in the morning and work really hard if you believe so much in what you're doing. And if you don't, it's a job, not a lifestyle. You know, you don't love it so much that you'll do whatever it takes to make it work. So as an entrepreneur, that's a great lesson just in general. Well, that's a wrap for us on episode 1 of season 3. I'm so glad that we're here at this moment to kick off another one. And we will see you guys all again next week. And Brittany, again, thank you so much for coming on. And I cannot wait to see you in December at Beauty Through Science. So guys, we'll see you all next week.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.